Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sange, your host for the weekend. And joining us today is one of my colleagues in the radio broadcast business, Jackson Polk. Jackson is one of the hosts of El Paso History Radio Show, and that airs on KTSM 690 on Saturdays. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of those shows. But first of all, we'd like to take the time to welcome Jackson. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you kindly for the invite. It's good to talk to you.
And I'm sure people out there are wondering, what the heck is going on? Cross promotion here. Well, if Kris Kringle could do it for Macy's, we could do it, right?
Well, why not? I mean, am I going to be opposite myself on Saturday?
Yeah, exactly.
That has happened. Well, no, I do the radio show. I produce the program and I host the program. Melissa Sargent is co-host. And I got into it when it was the Leon Metz radio show. An old common friend of ours in the past named Charlie Russell called me up one day and said, you know, Leon's a good old boy, does a lot nice storytelling, but he forgets to go to commercial. Can you come in and sit with him and put him on the air and make sure he goes to commercial and be his co-host? I said, oh, sure, I can do that. So I did that for 10 years, actually just a little over 10 years, working with Leon. And when he left the radio business, they asked me to stay, and I kept doing it. So now I'm in year number 20, 2-0 for me.
And it's interesting. You just threw out there one of those names, Charlie Russell, and I are familiar with a lot of those names because, as I told you, I grew up in Anthony, New Mexico, and you're a local man, kid. And, of course, we grew up with a lot of those radio voices.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Sonny Melendrez, go there. Steve Krosno. I actually worked with Steve for a while. I had when I went to work for Kelp TV, I got my first phone radio telephone license back in the day. That was a big deal, and immediately I was in demand. I got $1.20 an hour. Everybody else was getting $1.10, and so I went to work for Kelp Television and Radio. And I used to walk into Krosno's studio and flip the pattern on the AM station, and that's why they needed a first phone. So I got the job. I ran videotape over in television, and then Charlie Russell called me up a few weeks later. He had left Kelp AM 920. And gone to Kahe, which was kind of like, he likes country music. He called me up and said, hey, you want to come over here and spin records? I said, sure, I have no idea what that music is, but I'll show up. So I went over there when I was 18 years old, and I was on Kahe Radio. I worked with Johnny Dollar. I used to go out to the transmitter 18 miles out of town away from my house and play records out there, and because I had that license, they needed somebody to sit there with a license. So I figured out how to do radio through that method, even though I couldn't understand the country music. But bless them, they were color-coded. They say, play two red ones, a green and a blue. And they had all these 45 records up on spindles on the wall with little dots of color on them. So, okay, whatever this is, Nat Stuckey and whatever he did today, and here it is. And so, you know, that's how I got into it. I'd get that out of my system in about 4 months. I wanted to be a disc jockey and said, okay, done that, been there. Then I left town. I that was in 1970, give or take. And I left town and went to Washington, D.C., and basically got a career in television. Because when I got to D.C., I went to work for Congressman Richard White to get out of town, to get up there. I had a job running an elevator. So I spent my school year at American University and looked around to all the broadcast opportunities. And the biggest one that would pay the best and I thought would be the most fun would be a broadcast technician in television. And with that license, I was in need. They needed me, shall we say, and so I went to work for WTOP-TV. That doesn't exist anymore. It's changed call letters. But the thing is, that was a big deal back there because I went to work for them when I was 21. So I was in D.C. doing what I wanted to do in the television business and spent 7 years doing that. Then I formed my own company of television broadcasting in the National Press Building downtown. And we did satellite transmission, the first group to do that out of Washington, D.C. We transmitted TV news to all corners of the planet. There were 7 Japanese networks, 3 Canadians, 1 British, a smattering of maybe German and others. And we were their daily feed out of Washington. We did more TV out of D.C. back in the 70s and 80s than the American networks did. They were just half an hour a day. And we were on 24/7 just pumping stuff out of D.C. So that was my career. But I really wanted to do documentaries. So I quit that and went into documentaries in Washington, did some things at the U.S. Capitol. They lost the cornerstone, don't know where it was, that George Washington put there in 1793. And so they had a big anniversary coming, and I thought, well, 200 years, I'll go looking for it. And so I did a documentary on that. That got me out of the hard news business. And then I moved back to my own hometown of El Paso in 1997. And I thought, oh, this would be fun doing television in El Paso. But TV, as you may know, doesn't pay much in El Paso. And there was nobody doing the history. I said, why not? And the answer was, no, there's no money in it. So by then I knew how to do TV documentaries. So I started doing TV documentaries in 1997. And by 1998, we had a video on the air called El Paso's Keystone Site. And that was the first one I did here. I flew back and forth to D.C. doing videos for other groups in D.C. for a while. But then I came full bore back to El Paso and lived here. And my family had already moved here. And so my mother was still here. My father had passed. But there was a school named after him on the west side of El Paso, Hibbert Polk Elementary School. And so we put our son in that school. It's kind of a hoot. Because he'd go to school, and I'd go over there and say, there's a basketball with the name Polk on it. It's not my basketball. It's the school's, you know, there's a ladder with the name Polk on it. It's not my ladder. Oh, no, it's the school. But my kid, my son Andrew, he also got into broadcasting, but he's still there. But he kids would say, is this your school? He'd say, yeah. So we had fun with it. Anyway, so I moved back to my hometown, and Charlie Russell rang me up and said, hey, come in and put Leon on the air, because Leon already had his show on the air, but he'd sort of forget to go to commercial. And since I had been on the air 20 years earlier, actually longer than that, 27 years earlier with Charlie, he said, you can still do this. Oh, yeah, I can do it. And the thing was, Louie, I don't know what you know about broadcasting in El Paso, but it's pretty cheap. And so Charlie said, well, we can't pay you. I said, okay, how exciting can this get? He said, but we can give you tradeouts. What does that mean? Well, we'll give you commercial time, and you can use it to promote what you want. So I was just starting to make documentaries. I said, what the heck? So I started putting my documentaries on VHS in stores and using the commercial time they paid me in commercial time just to promote the store. And I started selling my videos that way. So that's kind of a weird, quirky thing, but I took advantage of what was going on, and I kept doing it.
We're visiting with Jackson Polk. Jackson is one of the co-hosts of the El Paso History Radio Show, and we're talking a little bit about El Paso Broadcast, his career, and some of the videos that he produced while he was still producing videos. And you mentioned the El Paso Keystone Projects, but you also came up with a couple others. The ones that I remember are the Ghost Stories and the Asarco and the Gunfighters. And I'm probably forgetting a couple of them, if you wouldn't mind sharing.
I started out doing something I really liked. I liked to hike up on the mountain, so I got to thinking, well, I should take a camera. And back then, the big broadcast cameras, I had one, but they're too big to take on the mountain very much. So I would take little ones and do what I could. And I started producing a program, what I called it Legends of El Paso's Mountains. And I talked my way onto all three tramways on the mountain, only at the time one was commercial. You could buy a ticket and go up there. But the other two were run by a TV station, Fox 14. And the first one that went on the mountain up there was actually the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration. I believe that's what that means. Anyway, so I got on that tramway, and I took video as I went. And I got to thinking, I got enough for a TV show here. So I turned it into Legends of El Paso's Mountains. And we took on things like the Lost Padre Mine and stories like that, and actual legends. And that got me into it. So I thought, what the heck? I'll do something else. So I did Gunfights of the Old West with the reenactor group Six Guns and Shady Ladies. And that my co-host today, Melissa Sargent, she's one of those shady ladies. So I've been working with the Sargent for years. And Bernie Sargent, great historian in El Paso, self-taught, but knows a lot. And we put him on the radio a whole bunch on my show because he knows stuff. And what I do, I'm a facilitator, really. I don't know the history so much as I appreciate it. And when I hear it, I kind of remember it, but the problem was, Louis, I grew up here, and they didn't teach history here. I knew nothing about Keystone until I nosed into it. I saw it on TV one day, so I got to get over to see what that is. And it's a 5,000-year-old archaeological site under the desert that nobody knew about till the late 70s. So I did a video on it and helped them save it because the guy was going to keep 4 acres for archaeology and put warehouse pads on the rest of it. So we stopped that. And he was kind of mad for a bit, but then we said, look, we'll buy it from him. What? So we went and found grant money, and the TV show helped explain it to people. And that ended up helping buy that property from him. So he thought, hey, this is okay. And that was the beginning. Legends of El Paso's Mountains, Gunfights of the Old West. I did El Paso's Waco Tanks. I got grant money along the way for a bit of that. I didn't know about much writing my grant writing, but I learned. But the thing was, I did a video on Mount Cristo Rey, and the Catholics wouldn't give me any money because they don't do that. They give money to poor people. And no grant people would say, we don't fund religious things. Well, it wasn't a religious video. It was a history video on how the place came to be. A very unusual, interesting story about local people, people in Smeltertown, decided to put a cross up there, and away they went. It got bigger and bigger and, you know, turned into a major thing. And it's a huge chunk of El Paso history. Everybody knows about Mount Cristo Rey, but they don't know how it got there. So I did that video, and with nobody helping me. Here's the good part, Louie. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
My wife had a real job, so she said, go for it. So she basically supported me. Wendy Polk, she was the, back in those days early, she was a reporter at El Paso Inc. Then she became editor. She went to UTEP for a few years, and after that, she went back to Inc. as editor. And she spent 10 years as the editor of El Paso Inc., which allowed me the time. She said, yeah, go ahead and do this, because I wasn't making much income. But I was making television and television history about El Paso. And we both thought that was important. So I kept doing it. And you mentioned the last tour of the El Paso smelter at Asarco. I did that. I went over there when the place was old and cold and the bankruptcy trustee had just taken over. And I said, nobody was ever allowed on this premise legally with a camera. Some people did take cameras once in a while, but they got their cameras broken. And so he said, sure, come in, shoot whatever you want, but I'm not going to pay a dime. So I went and found some grant money and shot the heck out of every building that was at Asarco at the time I went through it. It had been cold and old for 10 years, and we were the first footprints in the dirt inside many of those buildings. And after 10 years in sort of a factory setting, the wind had blown dirt all over the place. Our footprints were the first since the place was open. So we went through everything. I got inside the smokestack. I sent cameras up the outside of the smokestack. We got some incredible footage. And it's too bad drones hadn't been developed by then, because I would have used drones everywhere, but we didn't have access to them. But we did fly it with airplanes and I think helicopter one time. But so that was interesting, the last tour of the El Paso smelter. What was interesting, Asarco itself actually hired a camera guy to go shoot footage of the place in operation. So I got my hands on what I call the hot footage. Because, I mean, that place, they threw fire all over the place. And so we had two guys walking through the old coal place explaining how it used to operate, and then we roll in some of the footage of the place in operation. And, man, you talk about a bizarre thing. Picture a school bus-sized container full of molten ore that they had heated up with liquid oxygen and propane, and that stuff was 3,200 degrees. And they'd dump it on its side, pour it out, and make ingots out of it and ship them on a train someplace else for refining. So, I mean, it was interesting to see. So those are the kind of things I did. I did some commercial videos along the way. I worked for the El Paso Opera. I gave them a video or two. And I've done a few things like that. But the television had never been done in El Paso. But here's the kicker. Nobody was teaching history in the schools. And I'm looking at all this history saying, I mean, I did one Mexican Revolution sites in El Paso, because the Mexican Revolution, as big as it was across Mexico, was planned and manned and funded and equipped in El Paso. And people don't know that. I mean, Pancho Villa was here for a long time as a good guy, then he turned into a bad guy and got on the wrong side of President Wilson. And, you know, all kinds of things hit the fan, but that's history we don't know. And yet he was all over El Paso. So there's things like that that are everywhere out there. In this city, the Mission Trail, my goodness, what a treasure trove of history. I mean, you know, Don Juan de Oñate came through in 1598 in an entrada to conquer northern New Mexico, the Pueblos, because he had heard there was gold up there. Here I come. And Oñate's father had found actually a mountain of silver in Zacatecas, Mexico. So little Don Juan said, I can do the same thing. And he almost found one. He went within about 25 miles of a mountain of silver on his way up to northern New Mexico. If he'd stopped off in Hillsboro, that would have become the capital of New Mexico, because he would have found silver. But that didn't happen. He missed it. But anyway, he went on up there and took over New Mexico. But as he came through El Paso, he named El Paso. I mean, where did he get its name? There it is. So there's that kind of history that we were sitting in the middle of, and nobody knew. The remnants of what happened with Oñate was in the northern New Mexico. After about 80 years, the Indians said, heck with you Spaniards, and kicked them out and killed a bunch of them and ran them out of there. And where they came was back down the Camino Real, the roadway that they had created to get up there. They came back down and stopped in El Paso. That was their goal, because they figured they could take refuge here. And they weren't sure, but what the Indians were right behind them, still trying to kill them. Then they said what they did, they brought with them all of their treasures, if you will, which would be the gold pieces or silver or whatever that they had placed on the altars of all their churches. So they collected all of that and brought it with them to El Paso. And supposedly they hid it in the Franklin Mountains. Oh, I love that story. That's the legend of the Lost Padre Mine. And as a kid, I heard that story and went looking for it, but I didn't know what the rest of the story was. And so as I looked into it, the Mission Trail became what happened in El Paso, because as the Spaniards came back down in 1682 with all this stuff, 1680 actually, with all their stuff, and they brought two Indian tribes with them, one out of southern Albuquerque area called Isleta with an I, and then it became Isleta with a Y in El Paso, Isleta del Sur Pueblo, where we have Indians here been longer here than most people, but they're not native. They were imported. Another one was the tribe out of central New Mexico near Socorro, and that would be the Piros, and they ended up in Socorro, Texas. So there's history like that that you wonder how it got here. Well, I dug into it. I've done videos on the Mission Trail. Fascinating history. And that's what's wrong with this town. We don't teach our kids the history, because you could have hundreds of thousands of ambassadors of El Paso culture and heritage out there talking about us if they knew it. And the kids aren't taught that. So the radio show I do, we try to do what we can to help people understand their own heritage and history. And it's a heck of a thing. It really is. Because, I mean, people, that's why what our show is popular on a commercial station, because we're doing something that they need to know. And they realize, oh, this is great stuff. And so that's kind of who I am and how I got here.
We're visiting with Jackson Polk. Jackson is one of the co-hosts of the El Paso History Radio Show, along with Melissa Sargent, and it airs on KTSM 690 on Saturdays. Now, what you just mentioned, Jackson, about we're not teaching El Paso history to our young people, to anybody, actually. So your show is one of the avenues where they share some of those news. And unfortunately, sometimes people look at El Paso and they see it as the Marty Robbins song. And it's the big iron on his hip, the cowboy going into the badlands of New Mexico. And some people still think that El Paso is that dusty town. And yes, it has that old West history. And so leading into that, I want to talk a little bit about your video about the gunfights.
Oh, my. The El Paso at the time, and we're talking 1881, just before the train showed up, they had a major gunfight called the Four Dead in 5 Seconds. And we timed it as the reenactors did it, and they killed four people in 5 seconds. In our film, they got back up after the filming. But in the old days, I mean, that stuff was going on here. Very serious Old West violence. And when the train showed up, they brought in the gamblers and the prostitutes and the mayhem and a lot of guns. And so El Paso, for about 35 years, was a rolling gunfight potential every night. And so it was a Wild West, old, crazy town. And what happened was businessmen came in to establish themselves here, and their wives came along, and they weren't of that ilk, and so they helped clean it up. In fact, the Women's Club showed up, and they were created in the 1890s, and they helped reform, shall we say, the ways of El Paso. But here's one problem. Let me check this out. The fines on the prostitutes were funded the police department. So the police department wasn't real happy about getting rid of the business. They just wanted to keep fining them. And that's how they paid for their policemen. So that guy had to change. But back, that history is amazing. I mean, you go John Wesley Hardin, one of the bigger names in the Old West gunfighter business. He's buried in Concordia Cemetery. There's a treasure trove of history. Oh, my goodness. The people buried there, if they could tell stories, and they do. It's interesting. The Concordia Heritage Association, pre-COVID, they would do this every year, and I guess they'll pick it back up. But they would have reenactors standing on the gravesite of all these famous people and not so famous, and telling you the story of who they were and how they got here and what they did in El Paso and the first person. Great stuff to hear history. So they do it. It's called a walkthrough history. They normally do it in October, and it's a fabulous thing to go figure out. So there are groups that are doing the teaching of history where they can, but it's not in the curriculum of any public school. Now, Adair Margo and the Tom Lee Institute are changing that. They are getting some things in some of the school districts about Tom Lee. So they're looking at El Paso through the eyes of Tom Lee, and through that method, they are actually educating a lot of people. But it's whatever Tom Lee did that they're pushing mostly, and it's great. But it's not everything. I mean, they don't do the gunfight history because Tom wasn't into that. But there are a lot of people who think and know that the history here is fabulous. It just needs to be taught and explained. And I don't pretend to know it all. By now, I may have heard most of it and forgotten some of it, and I did videos on a lot of it. But there's so much. It's so diverse. See, that's one problem, Louis, to figure out when you start talking about El Paso history, where do you start? So really, I start with El Ñate and the Camino Real and establishment of that first major highway. You talk about Camino Reals all over California, all over southern Texas. The one through El Paso was the very first one, the first Camino Real extending outside of what is Mexico, came from the Mexico City up through Zacatecas, through El Paso, through Las Cruces, and all the way up into Albuquerque and beyond, northern New Mexico. So we have a tremendous amount of history. In fact, I'll tell you, that corridor I just described probably has more real American history than any other corridor of streets and roads in the United States, because that's about a 1,600-mile stretch of amazing things gone on. And that's what's wrong here. Most people don't know about it. We didn't get the movie. The Spanish-speaking people didn't become the government in the East Coast. It was English-speaking. So even though the Spanish were here way before the English, I mean, we by far, like 22 years, were functioning here in the Spanish population before the Pilgrims ever set foot on America. And when you realize things like that happen, it's an amazing story to tell, but it hasn't been told well. So I'm doing what I can, dude.
One of the things, Jackson, that people not complain, but they'll talk about the fact that, you know, we have so much history here, as you have mentioned, Jackson. But the fact is, most of the stories are told by people outside of El Paso. And one of those people, Samuel K. Dolan, who you just interviewed on your show, he wrote Hell Paso, and we're going to have Sam on next week. But what do you say when people tell you that?
About thank you.
About people.
Thank you for coming and paying attention to us, because you're correct. I mean, see, we've known the kind of things that Sam was poking into for quite some time. He went to the trouble to research even more than I ever heard about. So what we did basically with that video on gunfights of the Old West, focused on exclusively El Paso, we hit about five or six of the major ones that have been talked about. But he went through and found a whole bunch more because, as I mentioned, this was a very violent place. And what he has done is realized that the Old West gunfighter basically turned in through Prohibition into the gangsters. They just put on better clothes, but they still had guns killing people. So this has always been a rough place. So that's what Sam has been doing. He's chronicling all of that. And hats off to him. And I hope he does television. I've been pushing him to produce some TV stuff about this. Because I'm kind of like where I don't want to do that anymore. That's a lot of work. Radio is a lot of work, but I'm doing it. The thing is, if you're going to produce a television series, you need resources, you need time, you need all kinds of help. And right now, I'm retired pretty much except for radio, and I want guys like him to come. I welcome them. I really do.
Tell us a little bit about, because obviously the El Paso History radio show talks about El Paso history, but some of the listeners might wonder, Jackson, how do you go about selecting a specific topic?
It depends on what comes up. Now, there's some standard ones that we need to do because they're there and will always be there. We have two State of Texas historic designated sites in the county of El Paso. One is a MacGuffin home, and one is Waco Tanks. We did a show in December of 2020 on just those two. 1 hour on Waco Tanks with a professor from UTEP, and I said, could you please, Dr. Carmichael, could you explain the cultural history at Waco Tanks and some of the geological history? And then I got the people at McGoffinome that are from the Texas Historical Commission. That's who employs them. And I had the superintendent down there. I believe he's called a manager now. But anyway, I had them come on and explain the house, the history of the people, and why it's important. Because it's the only house museum in El Paso. So things like that I do recurring. I'll do some Mission Trail stuff recurring. But coming up soon here, I've got a show on the wine history of El Paso. There, at one point, El Paso was producing wines in this valley more than anywhere else in North America. And that's all gone. That history has disappeared. But that at one point was huge. So I went to Zin Valle Winery and said to the Poulos people, the father's son, Vic Poulos, the father, and son Ryan, I said, what can you guys do here on the history of El Paso? Oh, yeah, we got that. So I've got them coming on with that. Another one we're going to do is suggested by someone that, actually, Melissa Sargent came up with this one. She said, how about we do all the famous military people who have been through El Paso or lived here? So we got that one coming up. And it just depends on what's interesting. There's so much. At some point, I put a guy on, you may know him, Gaspar Enriquez, a major artist in El Paso. And I said, Gaspar, can you come on for 2 hours and talk history? He says, I don't know anything about history. I said, no, Gaspar, we'll talk about your history. You grew up in the Chamizal area, Bowie. And your mother said this is too rough a place, moved you to Isleta, and tell me about that. So that took a while, but it was interesting to hear. And how'd you get into art? He was an art teacher, I believe, at Bowie. So he, you know, he knew what to do from his own perspective, what the history was, and he didn't have to know about Mission Trail to get on the radio show. We heard him tell history from his perspective. So that's kind of what I do quite often. I get people who have lived, like Rosa Guerrero. Hey, Rosa, you grew up where? You got born where? Oh, you were born at what's now the convention center. Really? You know, things like that. And that's true, she was. So, I mean, we either grow chronologically, what did you see when you were growing up and coming through your life? Or what did you hear? Or what were you taught? Or what do you think now? And you can either do chronologically or just go around the horizon. Did you ever have anything to do with UTEP? And Rosa would say, oh, yes, I had a lot of time at UTEP. And, you know, it just depends on who they were. But the fabric of El Paso, obviously, is the people.
Before we leave, if you wouldn't mind giving us, you have a web page or a Facebook page that people can go to find out more?
We do. It's Facebook primarily, El Paso History Radio Show. You go to Facebook.com, look up El Paso History Radio Show, and there we are.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us and bringing us up a little bit on our history. We've been speaking with Jackson Polk. Jackson, along with Melissa Sargent, hosts the El Paso History Radio Show that is heard on KTSM 690 on Saturdays at 10 a.m. The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studio, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Sam Cassiano. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.